Well, I want to thank all of you for a terrific summer. Cooking for all you nice people has really helped me get over the fact that I fought in the Vietnam War. Have a great winter. I'm going to go hump the fridge.
What?
Yes, folks, it's true. I said I'm going to go hump the fridge. What you may not know is I also own a bottle of dick cream I found in my sweaters, and I often like to smear mud on my ass. You're probably asking yourselves, isn't he a weirdo? Outcast. Loose cannon. Maybe, I don't think so. I want to introduce you guys to someone. This is my friend. I don't know who he is, but I do know this. At a time when I was trying to hide myself from myself, he was there to show me a new way. Because I couldn't hide from him. And I could be proud of who I am. I put it to you. Campfirewood, as we spend the last dinner together, be proud of who you are. Look at me, my eyes made it, I'm okay!
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
Under strengths, you just put accounts.
Yeah.
That's your job, though. That's just... Mm. No, Keith, but I was sort of looking for your skills within your job, so is there anything else you could have put there? No. Okay. Under weaknesses, you've put eczema.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
Not today. It's not the Bob and Elvis Show. Well, it is the Bob and Elvis Show, technically. Christopher Maloney there, he's unbelievably hilarious. And no one knows that he's so hilarious. It's from Wet Hot American Summer. If you haven't seen it, you should see it. The guy from Law & Order is quite funny. And then, of course, The Office. And Keith and Eczema. So, I don't know where the hell Dingledorf is today. I've tried emailing, I've tried texting, I've sent out a search party, St. Bernard's with, you know, kettles of rum attached to their necks, and no dice. I don't know where he is. Somewhere in Nebraska, in a bunker. So filling in for Elvis today is, you might know him on the blog as Jumpy Pants. It's John Christian Plummer, my good friend and writing partner, John.
Hello.
There he is.
Hello.
And you're actually broadcasting.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can totally hear you. Can you hear me?
I'm broadcasting pre-recorded from New York City.
That's right. And you're in like a cafe near the Time Warner building, right?
We don't have to call it a cafe. We can call it my office.
your office.
It's my office. It is near the Time Warner building. It's within spitting distance from the Time Warner building, if that is, you're a llama. And it's about three blocks away from the Time Warner building. That's right. So, I'm practically at CNN headquarters right now.
Okay. But within spitting distance. So you could literally spit on CNN if you wanted to.
If I wanted to. And if I were a llama and had that kind of spitting range. I don't have that range. Or a llama or a pitching coach. Pitching coaches are incredible spitters. Did you know that?
Yeah, they're very skilled at the spitting.
I don't really follow baseball, but I follow the behavior of baseball players.
You follow the salivary habits of baseball coaches.
Yeah, and their hairstyles, uniforms, etc. That's what I'm interested in.
See, that's rare. That's a commodity. That ought to be discussed more often in play-by-play.
Yeah, I agree. It would be if I were a color commentator. But that's why I'm not, I guess. So.
Well, I really appreciate you.
They're making money as it is. They don't need to hire me to talk about how far the guys spit.
Yeah, so. That's right. I mean, but it's, I'm sure it would be valuable to, you know, teach up and comers, you know, the proper techniques for spitting. yeah, I really appreciate you filling in here. Like I said, I have no idea where.
I appreciate being asked. I've been waiting for this invitation for months now.
And so. I've had you on speed dial just in case at any point in time.
Yeah. Yeah,
the Dingledorf is incapacitated.
The truth should come out now. It's me who took Elvis out, you know.
That's right.
Sitting right next to me, trussed like a Thanksgiving turkey, you know, blindfolded, handcuffed, and tied up. And nobody even notices in this cafe in New York because that's very normal.
Yeah.
You know, New York City is a, you know, den of iniquity. You know, it's where Bill O'Reilly lives. So,
So moments ago, we could have seen you hopscotching from one built rooftop to the next, like breaking the gun apart, doing the De Niro and Godfather 2 thing, where he's dropping the little pieces into the stovepipes.
To the stovepipe. Yep. Right. Yep. That was me. That was me. But it was Elvis was my target, just so I could co-host this podcast with you.
So I'm getting this weird visual of you lurking in the hallway of a three-story walk-up. And just wait, and
Elvis
comes
up
there.
Show up.
Yeah, in a white suit and a hat with like the gold tooth and the cape. You know, he's got like a white cape.
Don Cheech. Yeah.
Yeah, Don exactly. Cheech. He's like flicking the light bulb, and it's flickering, and there you are with the handgun with the towel wrapped up
with the towel. Yeah. Ready to catch on fire.
And there's Dingledorf, right?
And yeah, he doesn't see it coming. He thinks he's on top of the world as the podcast co-host.
If he actually listens to the show, he's going to be so offended now that we're talking about, you know, how you've assassinated him.
Yeah,
in the fiction of the show, you've just shot him in the chest.
Maybe he will be upset, and maybe next week we'll all three be on, and we can discuss his upset.
Well, my concern is that he's actually going to do it to you. Like you better watch your back.
He's coming after me.
Yeah, he's coming after you. He's on the next plane.
He does have that military streak in him. You never know. You never know.
He's got a gun. As all of the woodland critters on his farm of doom can attest, he's got a gun and he's not afraid to use it.
It's packing heat. But, you know, I may be packing heat too. I live in New York City.
I mean, he totally took out that possum a few weeks ago. I mean, just blew the thing's head just clean off.
Wow.
I mean, you know, he doesn't take on a possum with just any gun. I mean, he had like a bazooka.
What kind of a gun does he have? Does he have like a .30-06 or something?
This is a squirt gun. It's a super soaker. I mean, he exaggerates. It's just a super soaker.
It's a super soaker, but he loads it with gasoline.
He loads it with gasoline.
And he carries a lighter.
And acid. He's just firing acid at woodland critters. Because he doesn't want to kill them. He just wants to melt them and torture them.
Yeah. Yeah. He's dangerous. So what are we talking about, Bob?
Well,
are we going to talk about political matters? That's the whole, you know, oeuvre here on the podcast.
No,
right?
We're just going to spend the next hour talking about Elvis behind his back. We're just going
to
talk about
really behind his back. If he can listen to this later, you know, that's kind of almost doing it in front of him.
Well, see, there's your mistake. He doesn't listen to the show.
He never listens.
No,
to the show.
Not even when he's doing the show.
The
he doesn't.
That's the problem. He doesn't have internet access.
That's right.
They don't. Because Nebraska shut down the internet.
And even when he's doing the show, he doesn't listen to the show.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He just does his own show, and I just work in comments edgewise. Yeah.
now you're really trying to piss him off.
Hey, that's right. Well, absolutely. Well, he misses a show. What does he expect? He's, you know.
I think it's great that you said he just missed it, rather than coming up with some excuse like, you know, Elvis is on hiatus or Elvis is busy. I think, you know, your transparency is something WikiLeaks would admire. Julian Assange would admire your transparency. Nothing to leak about the Bob and Elvis show because it's all out in the open.
I wasn't that kind. I mean, we've been fantasizing about him being assassinated for the last 10 minutes.
It doesn't matter. It's transparent. That's the point. It's out in the open. And we're not I don't wish to shoot him in a three-story walk-up. That's not my wish. It's just because I thought that idea up doesn't mean I want to do it. I think up a lot of things I don't want to do, you know. Most of them illegal.
That's
so.
Right.
Maybe I do want to do them, and I'm just prohibited by the rule of law.
Well, today's show brought to you, of course, as always, by Bubble Genius and Pomegranate Journeys. Now, speaking of WikiLeaks, we disagree on WikiLeaks. And but well, I'm not sure
what you think about WikiLeaks, because you're very cagey about it. You know, I know you don't like Michael Moore pulling that what you call a stunt.
Yeah,
I don't. I mean, Michael Moore's is a stuntman. His whole career is stunts. I don't think you can get mad at Michael Moore for doing that any more than you can get mad at him for making Fahrenheit 9/11. It's all the same. Everything's a stunt with him.
It's not that I'm mad at Michael Moore. I've got no anger or gripe with Michael Moore. It was just when I saw that, it was uncomfortable. It made me sort of, it gave me kind of a sour face, and I kind of started to get, you know, shifty in my seat as I was reading it, because like, really, and $20,000 for bail. You know, I'm just thinking where that money could go.
But that's, forgive me for putting too fine a point on this, but that's just dumb. I mean, it's Michael Moore's money. Whatever. He can do whatever he wants with it, you know? I mean, and I'm sure Michael Moore gives away money to worthy causes, you know, every year, you know? Yeah. Actually, I'm not sure. I've heard he's a tightwad. But anyway, but that to the side, Ken Loach offered to cover the whole bail. He was going to put up £180,000. He and this wealthy British socialite, we're going to put up £180,000, which is almost $400,000. The first time around, you know, when Assange first turned himself in. Ken Loach, for those of you who don't know, also a filmmaker of fiction films, excellent, excellent fiction films, most of which are extreme. He's a socialist, because you can be a socialist in the UK and not be totally vilified for it. I thought, more power to Loach. What's wrong with offering money for Julian Assange's bail?
Well, I think part of my issue is it's not about Assange. It's not about him. I mean, certainly he's the catalyst for all of this. But if he goes to jail for whatever charges, you know, are being held against him, the whole WikiLeaks thing is going to continue without him. If we focus too much on Assange, we're missing the bigger picture. And I don't know. I have no idea what his agenda is. I don't know what's really motivating him.
He wrote a really great paper. I think it was his graduate thesis, actually, essentially about conspiracy. And what he said was, government is an open conspiracy. You know, it's not six men in a room. It's this actually very open conspiracy, to control lots of things, you know, but mostly to control energy and information and, you know, and money.
Yeah.
And so it is the job of the media, of the press, to shine a light on that. Because when you shine a light on it, it automatically becomes less conspiratorial. It automatically becomes more open and forces and allows people to dictate, you know, or to vote for change or whatever you want to say or to take action for change or to get involved for change, so that government will evolve positively, progressively, and for more people rather than for fewer people. Mm-hmm. And I think that is really his agenda, full stop, you know, is transparency. And these charges, I mean, if you just kind of look at the timeline of things, it doesn't take a genius to realize this is a bit of a put-up job. And, you know, I know people want to argue about the definition of rape in Sweden and, you know, the legal definition of, you know, sexual abuse or whatever. But the bottom line is, this guy is, you know, it's like Capone with the tax evasion. With one exception, is that Capone was evading his taxes. But that was the only way for the FBI to get Capone, you know, because they couldn't prove anything else on him. Here, I think the Swedes, with heavy inducement from the CIA, are saying, you know, let's just get this motherfucker in jail. And... Yeah. and here we go. These women, the first woman was tweeting enthusiastically after she'd slept with him about how she'd slept with the founder of WikiLeaks, and then suddenly she turns around and says she's assaulted. Now, maybe she was assaulted, you know, I don't know, and that's up for the court to decide, and the court will come to that decision, let's hope. But meanwhile, the guy turned himself in voluntarily. He should be given bail. I mean, he is not a flight risk at all. You know, he turned himself in. That's how much not a flight risk he is.
Yeah.
He voluntarily went into court. He should be given bail. It's absurd to not give him bail.
Right.
I mean, he's got white hair. He looks like Julian Assange. Where's he going to go?
He's not. He's not going to vanish. He's not inconspicuous.
He's not going to vanish because it's not in his interest to vanish at all. And furthermore, here's why it's not in his interest to vanish. He vanishes, he gets killed. You know, that's he needs to stay in public, but he needs to stay safely in public. He should be granted bail. And I agree with you that it's not about Julian Assange. It's about WikiLeaks and Wiki, mm-hmm. you know, and but I think that WikiLeaks, you know, the governments, the Swedish government, the British government, and obviously the American government, have made it about Julian Assange. And so I think we have to address that too. You know, we can't just say it's not about Julian Assange. It is about Julian Assange at this point.
I mean, transparency obviously
Elvis
is...
Elvis doesn't talk this much, does he?
No, yes, he does.
Okay.
Yes, he does. depending on the show, of course, depending on what we're talking about. It doesn't concern you at all. I mean, national security isn't an issue, really. I mean, I've got a variety of concerns about this, and I'm not against transparency.
I listen to guys talk about that. I mean, Elvis and I think really differ on this, but I don't think it's his job to be worried about. I don't think it was. Look, let's use a safe example, safe from the standpoint of of historical distance.
Okay.
The Pentagon Papers,
all right?
Daniel Ellsberg.
Yeah,
it was not Daniel Ellsberg's job to be, in his mind, to be concerned with national security per se. It was his job to be concerned with, you know, he worked for the government. He wasn't a journalist. But let's talk about the New York Times that published the Pentagon Papers. Their job was not national security. Their job was, you know, shining a light on the truth. That's the job of the Fifth Estate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's WikiLeaks' job to be worried about national security. I think that's the national security, advisor's job. That's the president's job. And do journalists have a responsibility to, keep certain things secret? Obviously, if things were going to get a lot of people killed and hurt, I think WikiLeaks would hold back on things, and they have held back on things. And in that one case of the Afghan, informers, they apologized and said, well, you know, we thought we'd gone through and redacted everybody, but we didn't, and we fucked up. I think in a healthy system, which we don't have, obviously, the job of the press is to, you know, report, is to shine a light on what's going on. But there's very little press that's doing that. Mm-hmm. Very little. Most of the press is really just a mouthpiece for for press releases, essentially.
Yeah.
And in some cases, very big and very serious organizations like the New York Times are such a mouthpiece that they, you know, get a war started. You know, I mean, it was Judy Miller's reporting, you know, in some large measure that led to the, you know, the so-called, you know, WMD intel that, you know, helped justify launching a war of aggression against Iraq.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you're right about whose responsibility it is to protect national security. It's not WikiLeaks. It's not, but I mean, so therefore you think maybe focusing on plugging the leak internally rather than going after Assange and trying to make him the villain, maybe we ought to stop the
government should do if that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but I think that, I mean, I think, look, these cables, people are saying, a lot of people have said, these cables are, this is nothing. This is just a big document dump, but that's not true. I mean, if you look at the stuff about, what was happening with the, you know, with the Arab governments in the Middle East, you know, us finding out through those cables that they were encouraging us to bomb Iran and encouraging Israel to bomb Iran, that's important information. We all knew it. I mean, you didn't have to think very hard to realize that. But it's important to know that they're just as scared of Iran as anybody else. And it's not only because Ahmadinejad is nuts. It's because Ahmadinejad is democratically elected. Mm-hmm. That's why they're scared, you know.
Yeah.
And it's important to know. I think it's important for Americans to know. I think it's important for the world to know that, you know, look, if WikiLeaks had been around during the rush to war in Iraq, who knows what could have happened if cables had been released during that time. We might not have gone to war in Iraq, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go to war against Iran. We don't need to go to war against Iran. It is the stated objective of the United States State Department and of the United States government to achieve peaceful situations diplomatically first. Now, obviously, we didn't do that in Iraq at all. And frankly, we didn't do that in Afghanistan. So we then, therefore, went against our stated objectives. WikiLeaks would argue, I think, and I've seen Assange argue this, that by releasing those cables, they were forcing a diplomatic process rather than a violent process. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true. Because when you bring it out into the open that the, you know, the King of Jordan wants us to bomb Iran, suddenly it makes it a little bit harder for us to bomb Iran, doesn't it?
That's right. That's right.
So,
I mean, there are certain aspects of all of this that are extraordinarily positive. My objection right now is nuzzling up too close to Assange. Because I don't know. I don't know what his...
You're afraid the condom's going to break between the two of you.
That's right. He makes me uncomfortable because we don't know, you know, it's entirely likely. And certainly it's
Are
reflecting.
Are you anti-Australian?
I fucking hate Australians. That's my issue with Assange. No, he's clearly, you know, he's going to attack. Or not attack, but I mean, what he's doing is negatively impacting everyone, and I think to a certain degree that's fine, but also, you know, I get uncomfortable.
I don't know that that's true. I think that's
well, no, it's making this administration look very bad at this point. I mean, that's a fact, and certainly it's not helping the previous administration. But
right.
I get really worried when. You know, when we start talking about transparency and we start talking about, you know, both sides are the problem whenever there's a Democratic president, you know,
understood.
You know what I mean? It's just wait, like,
you know, I'm a big fan of the president.
Of course.
And even though I don't agree with him a lot of the time, but that's not. I don't agree with most presidents a lot. I'm way to the left of anybody that's ever been president.
That's right.
But I'm also, you know, a rationalist in that I think, you know, that's, you know, he's doing a great job. He is, I really think. And he doesn't get everything right. Nobody does. Mm-hmm. But I think that I think it's more a matter – I mean, you saw the poll that just came out today. Even though his approval's at 45, mm-hmm. you know, which is, by the way, pretty good for a sitting non-wartime president. That's pretty good, actually. The other big poll number was – well, two other big poll numbers were that Palin has no shot
right.
and that he has a very healthy chance of being reelected, which I think he does.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little bit of a tempest in a teapot. I think the average voting American, the average voting Democrat, the average voting independent, the people who voted for the president, you know, a couple of years ago, they don't even know what the fuck WikiLeaks means. Yeah. And I don't think they care. I honestly don't.
Right.
They really don't.
Right.
You know, they don't know who Julian Assange is. I mean, honestly, if you walked out the street in, you know, your town in Pennsylvania and you just asked 10 people, do you know who Julian Assange is? They would have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I would say eight of those 10 people would have no idea.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. But at the same time, I mean, we're talking more specifically in terms of people who do talk and engage in all of these things. And those are the people generally who vote. And I get really worried when...
Chamber, yeah. But those the people that are already voting... I mean, look, now we're getting into what your blog is about, which is progressives beating up on Obama, right?
Well, Obama. I guess there's a gradual segue into that. But, I mean, I just get very antsy about the idea that, you know, and this is what happened during the Clinton years, too. Suddenly, you know, when there's a Republican president, we're focused, you know, laser focused on, you know, on that particular president, on George W. Bush, most recently. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as soon as and we work very hard to get him replaced with a Democrat.
Right.
And a liberal Democrat, despite what I think some progressives might think. And suddenly he's elected. And then instead of continuing to focus on the Republicans as the opposition party, suddenly we're kind of dividing our power and dividing our focus on both the Republicans and the Democrats for some reason.
Right.
And
Democrats.
That relates to, well, yeah, that's true.
Democrats. But, I mean, that's going to happen. I guess what I'm saying is, I think the way, here's what I think. I think the president is far more at risk for any decisions he may have made or not made that regard the economy and jobs and taxes than he is by diplomatic cables being released or not released. You know, I really do. In other words, and I don't think this is just me talking. I think every poll will back this up. You know, most presidents are judged on, you know, by voter. I mean, voters vote with their pocketbooks. They vote with their wallets. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that if the president in 2 years can show that we're better off now than we were 4 years ago financially, which he's working very hard to show, and he's working very hard to do that, make us better off, mm-hmm. then he'll win re-election. And if he can't, he'll be much more at risk. His diplomatic relationship with foreign countries doesn't factor into most people's vote, I think. Mm-hmm. I think polls bear that out. It factors in only in one way, which is if we have a better relationship with China, you know, tax-wise or tariff-wise or, you know, import-wise that, you know, or debt-wise, that's what people care about, you know?
Yeah.
Don't you think? I mean, I just think the WikiLeaks thing is a little bit of a false issue, that it's an echo chamber issue. It's the kind of thing that the talking heads love to talk about and love to get into certain minutia about, because there is a lot of minutia about it and also about Assange's case. And they're not really talking about it at all. They're not really talking about, you know, governmental transparency or anything like that. They're talking about Julian Assange, as you said. But I also think it's, you know, well, it's a phony issue.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. That there's a ripple effect. I mean, and this is sort of, this plays into the role of blogs and people like Keith Olbermann or Rachel Maddow, mm-hmm. where they're not necessarily, everyone said, well, they're preaching to the choir, blogs are preaching to the choir, and we're talking to the same people over and over again, and everything bounces back and forth in an echo chamber. But actually what it does is it provides this, almost a service for people within that echo chamber to then repeat it to others, to carry it beyond the echo chamber.
Well, it's the articulation of the meme.
Yeah, it's right. Exactly. And then it gets talked about at the cliche of the water cooler and winning the water cooler wars. And then it kind of spreads out from there.
Yes.
And so it becomes less about
an
echo chamber.
Democrats, there's no question. Democrats have always excelled at having a divisive, internally divisive meme, or a disorganized meme, you might even say. And the GOP, since Barry Goldwater, have excelled at having an organized meme. You know, they're in lockstep,
yeah.
No question. I think, and it's frustrating sometimes as a Democrat. You know, it's very frustrating. But at the same time, that's what makes us Democrats. We can disagree with each other. I think the key is that when the election rolls around, when we get into campaign mode, we got to be together. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how we won last time. I mean, that's how the president won.
Yeah, you know what? And I still don't believe that we were together at that point in time. I mean, there's a revisionism that's going on with regards to the role of progressive movement.
Well,
and
we weren't together during the primaries. That's
yeah. Well, you know what? We got to do this commercial, and then and when we come back, we're going to really dive into this. Okay. So you're familiar with Bubble Genius, right? The sponsor of today's show. One of two sponsors. Where's my notes? I don't have any notes. Oh, I don't need notes. I don't need notes about Bubble Genius. I know exactly what I'm about. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. www.bubblegenius.com is the address. Hilarious, all-natural, eco-friendly products for bath, body, and mental well-being. You know what? It's actually... This is kind of a sad note. It's too late, really, to buy anything for the holidays. They've actually, if you buy anything now, it might not ship in time for the holidays.
Really? I can't believe it.
But there's always New Year's.
True.
Yes. So, it was really funny. I got a note from Bubble Genius, and they said, you know, it's a tad late for more holiday purchases. So they hope you have a happy, safe, and clean Christmas and New Year. So, you know, you won't get your stuff in time, but fare thee well.
Yeah.
Nevertheless.
You know what? Getting stuff on time is overrated anyway.
That's right. Bubble Genius brings you soap and body products like you've never seen before. They've got something for everyone from guys to girls to kiddies and expectant mothers and even your best friends. So, I mean, you know what? Even if you don't get something for the holidays, there's always those between Christmas and New Year's and even post New Year's parties and things that you get together with and friends and relatives who you see after the fact. So there's always a chance that you could squeeze something in by then. And if you do order,
Everybody wants to get a gift later than Christmas because it's like an extra, it's like, you know, the 12 days. Don't forget the 12 days of Christmas, right?
Exactly. It's like bonus gifts. You think, okay, well, good. I've received everything I was going to receive, and oh, look at this. What is this?
What are these five golden rings doing here?
It's a glow-in-the-dark baby
Jesus. I thought I just had a partridge in a pear tree. Oh, my goodness. Five golden rings?
So
there's 12 days.
That's right. And so, yeah, exactly. So, like, the baby Jesus glow-in-the-dark soap and the rope on a rope will be very appropriate for beginning of January. See, yeah. Now I'm getting snarky about Bubble Genius, and they're going to smack me later, so whatever. Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable, even the shrink wrap, protecting your soap. Or reusable, like their tins. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption by not having this stuff shipped from across the globe. They do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable, and their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants. And if you order your products from Bubble Genius, enter the promo code Bob and Elvis, BOBANDELVIS, and get 15% off your entire order. Pure products, pure genius. It's Bubble Genius. And today's show also brought to you by Pomegranate Journeys at www.pomegranate.travel, the cure for the common vacation. Pomegranate combines several of my favorite things in the entire universe, that is food, wine, cycling, and the European nations of France and Italy. And of course, when I do list my favorite things in the world, it would be the European nations of France and Italy, right there at the top of the list.
Well, you're Italian.
That's right.
You're probably part French.
Yeah, a little bit of French in there, I think, on my grandmother's side. Visit Pomegranate's updated website at pomegranate.travel to see new trips and their hiking and photography trip in Italy's famous Cinque Terre. Now, that's important because not everyone wants to ride a bicycle, but you want to experience the entire Pomegranate European travel flavor, and you want to, you know, maybe just walk it.
Yeah.
Hop out, walk it, and photograph it. I mean, you know, one of the things I've always wanted to do is go to France and photograph as many gargoyles as possible. I don't know if you've been to... One of the coolest...
I lived in Paris.
You did?
Yes, I did.
When?
In the 7e arrondissement.
Oh, my God. See, now, I think I'm the only person on the planet who's not ever been there.
Oh, it's incredible. It is. It truly is. It is the, and I'm in New York right now, but I will say it is the most beautiful city I've ever been to.
And someone in New York just hurled a snowball at your head.
Yeah. Ah, Jesus. I meant that metaphorically. Yeah, no, it's gorgeous. It's incredible. I've never been to Italy, though. I'd love to go to Italy. And I'd love to hike or bike around Italy, just like in an E.M. Forster book or something, you know?
Right. So, I mean, if you're like me and you've never been to France, what better way to do it than with Pomegranate Travel, Pomegranate Journeys at www.pomegranate.travel, the cure for the coming vacation.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Not today.
Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Mm-hmm. And we need to beef up our iTunes listener tally. You know, who's got they've got like ratings there where there's sort of evaluating which podcasts get downloaded the most, and we end up popping into there, but we don't sustain in there, which is kind of frustrating. But I guess it's partly our fault because we haven't done as many shows during these holidays, during the holiday season as I've liked to. But
maybe now that I've murdered Elvis in his white suit.
Well, I mean, last week
I can tell you it's going to go up by one, which is my mom.
Oh,
so.
That's perfect. That's perfect. So mom's going to tune in, which
for
maybe
sure, for sure.
And she's going to hear the opening of the show with Christopher Maloney talking about smearing mud on his ass.
Wet Hot American Summer is her favorite movie. It goes that and then Room with a View. So. In that order. Speaking of Italian journeys.
So, I mean,
Christopher Maloney is an Italian journey in and of himself. So.
Yeah, and if you've ever seen Oz, that
yes.
brings out...
He is extremely funny, though. I was tangentially involved in a pilot with him this fall, Michael Showalter pilot, and he is so hilarious. Just so... He is... Really, really funny guy. You know, he doesn't get to show it on SVU, but he's very funny.
Well, he steals that movie, Wet Hot American Summer.
He's great in Harold and Kumar too.
Oh, he's in that.
Yeah, he's the what's his face creepy. You
know, oh, that's right. Okay, right.
He's amazing. That's he's right. Unrecognizable. He's brilliant. He's very, very funny guy. Very good actor.
So progressives are pissing me off again.
Yeah.
It just seems like not a week goes by before I get, oh, my God. My God, you people. Please.
Stop whining.
Right. Stop whining. It's one thing after another, at least recently, and I'm kind of concerned that progressives are just flying way, way off the rails. And it's getting to the point where, you know, we have lots of facts and things at our disposal, and we're supposed to be the reality-based people, and we're not lately. And it's
right.
and there are several examples, and and it's not specifically the two characters who I singled out in my Huffington Post column this week, who were Marcos and Keith Olbermann. And I say that like they're married, like, oh, look, it's the Olbermanns, Marcos and Keith. No, it's not. They're Marcos Melitzis from Daily Kos and Keith Olbermann, who I just use them as examples of progressives who are kind of overreaching beyond the realms of the truth, to put it not so bluntly. They're kind of lying. And with Marcos... Maybe lying is a bit harsh. There's a misconception going on with the president's view about the tax cut plan.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And,
I mean, whether they're lying or they're just wrong or they're selective. I think there's a lot of selective fact parsing that goes on in order to make your argument work. And everybody does it. But it's just, yeah, this, as you pointed out in your blog, on your Huffington Post blog, it's just, they're just wrong. Whether they're lying or whether there's a malicious motive behind it or it's mendacity or not, it's wrong.
Yeah.
It's flat out wrong.
Now, you can partly blame the president because the messaging on this and the optics have been horrible.
Yeah.
You know, they've been referring to it as the tax cut plan, which brings in confusion. I mean, mainly, I've been receiving a lot of responses, and this is sort of stemming where this is the crux of the criticism about the president from people like Marcos and maybe even Keith Olbermann, is that you know, he's suggesting that, and the misconception is that he's suggesting that the tax cuts are creating jobs. But what he's been saying is that the tax cut plan.
The president
plan,
is suggesting tax cuts.
Exactly. That the president is suggesting the tax cuts will create jobs. And he's not.
Right.
He's saying
he's
that
not.
The plan, the deal that he struck, will create jobs, which is true. And it actually will. But when you see it in print, it says, for example, you know, the tax cut plan will create jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And people aren't seeing the plan word in that phrase.
Right.
And so they're thinking that they see tax cuts and they see create jobs and they go, well, that's ridiculous. But, you know, I kind of would like to think that, you know, we can read, you know, and we're seeing that word in there and saying, well, he is specifically referring to the overall plan. And the plan includes unemployment benefits, which do, in fact, stimulate the economy,
right?
Which in turn creates jobs,
right? But yeah, I mean, but don't you think? I mean, you have to look at what people's motives are here, and don't you think that the motives are what they've always been since January of almost two years ago, is that, you know, that the president did not come in and unilaterally change everything really fast. You know, that he didn't come in and just immediately, you know, beat the crap out of every sitting Republican, throw George W. Bush in jail, and, you know, and disband the Defense Department or whatever, you know, whatever things you wanted him to do, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because what people in this specific instance, I think what people are angry about is that he's working with Republicans. And in working with Republicans, he's, you know, as Franken talked about in his Huffington Post blog, he's extended the tax cuts for the super rich for 2 years. But Franken voted for it for all the reasons Franken cites, because it's the baby in the bathwater, you know? And and I think what bothers people about – I think what bothers, you know, progressives or liberals, you know, especially those who blog, who are, you know, far more to the left than any elected official – any national elected official could ever be, what bothers them about the president, which has bothered them from the beginning, is that he's a moderate, which is to say he moderates between both sides, both opposing extremes of a spectrum, and he's very good at it. And in fact, it's in his, I would argue, it's in his DNA. It's certainly in his upbringing. And he's written extensively about it on a personal level in terms of how it affects, you know, how being, racially mixed child and racially mixed adult affected him. And then he's also written about it on a governmental level and on a very human level as well, in that, you know, we have to try to meet each other halfway. And sometimes people get angry. Why should we meet John Boehner halfway? He's not willing to meet us halfway. But, you know, Boehner's on the planet.
Yeah, it is within his nature, and that's what he's all about. That's what he's talked about since his big keynote address in 2004.
I think that's what Marcos is angry about. What he's angry about is that, don't you think?
That's what he's angry about. But I mean, I don't get what's the sudden surprise. I mean, this is the Barack Obama that we've been looking at and examining and talking about since 2004, with some people even before that. And so none of this should come as any sort of surprise. But it's not just the desire to compromise. It's the necessity to compromise. He's got no choice. If he wants to get anything done, he's going to have to do what he's going to have to do in order to get Republican votes. Because he's not going to – nothing is going to pass. It's going to end up in a government shutdown. And so the next 2 years will be a complete wash.
Right.
The next 2 years plus, because there's no indication that 2012 is going to swing the pendulum back in favor of the Democrats in terms of control of Congress. So in order to get anything done, and so what he's doing with this plan specifically, with this deal, is he's staring down the barrel of lots of people, lots of unemployed Americans losing their unemployment insurance on top of the fact – that that this is an obvious way to stimulate the economy, which needs to happen.
Right.
And so how do you get that done? How do you get more stimulus? How do you make sure that people aren't slipping into poverty because there aren't any jobs and unemployment benefits expired? Well, right. What do you have to sacrifice? Well, okay. In order to get those Republican votes, we're going to have to talk to those guys and we're going to have to give them something they want, which right. is, in this case, a continuation of the Bush tax rates. Oh, mm-hmm. boo-hoo. Get over it, progressives. You know, at this point, there should be no one complaining about this. Because I don't understand what the alternative was. What was the alternative? Was it, well, you bring that up, and I hate to play sort of this straw man argument, but I do have emails and tweets and other things to back this up. Well, maybe the president ought to lead a little bit. Maybe he ought to get forceful and yell, or, I don't know, pound his fist on the podium or something like that. But what's that going to get him?
Or refuse to sign a bill.
Or refuse to
sign a lot of bills.
That's right. People like Jane Hampshire were on, like, let me just get this out. She was on Lawrence O'Donnell last week saying that, well, yeah, maybe he ought to just let everything expire. Unemployment benefits, let the tax cuts expire too. That's fine for Jane Hampshire, who's independently wealthy. Okay.
It's also fine for George W. Bush.
Yeah.
And that's what George W. Bush did. I mean, that was the way he governed. You know, it's the my way or the highway way. And Jane Hampshire didn't like that. And nobody did. No liberals like that. Mm-hmm. We didn't just like Bush because of the decisions he made, but we also didn't like him because of the way he made them, which was unilaterally. And yet when we now have our president, you know, our Democratic president coming in and making decisions after a tremendous amount of mediation that goes on, a tremendous amount of back and forth and compromises. In other words, the anti-Bush, the anti-my way or the highway guy, mm-hmm. were beating him up for that and saying he should be more my way or the highway. Wrong.
Yeah.
Completely wrong.
Right.
And hypocritical, honestly. It's hypocritical of progressives who beat up on Bush for years for that kind of behavior to say that's what Obama needs to do. I mean, they don't see that they're saying that, but that's what they're saying.
Yeah, and it's that.
He needs to act more like a decider, right? Like the dictator, like the emperor.
That's exactly right. Suddenly,
I mean, because that's what they're saying. Act more like an emperor.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, and which is the point of view on don't ask, don't tell? Is it why don't you sign an executive order and just have everything rolled back, and repeal it as the president? And that's good. That's good until 2 years from now, the potential of a Republican being elected and just mm-hmm. signing another executive order, wiping that previous executive order away.
Exactly.
So what the president wants to do is he wants to make it law. So he's waiting on Congress. Although Keith right. Olbermann would call that foot dragging, you know, which he did in his special comment. There were a whole list of, like, I couldn't believe my ears. Olbermann going through a list of genuine firebagger gripes about the president. Okay. Yeah. The president preemptively abandoned the public option. The president preemptively abandoned single payer, which, regarding the latter, you can't abandon something that was never part of your policy in the first place. It was never, single payer was never on the table. How can you abandon something that was never on the table and didn't have a snowball's chance in hell of actually getting anywhere? Because,
well, it's really ahistorical. It's ahistorical to make these grievances. Because, again, and you've brought this up numerous times on the blog about FDR and Social Security and so many things that we now take for granted as the law of the land happened in progressive steps, I would say, in baby steps, you know, a little step here, a little chink here, I didn't mean a Chinese person, by the way, I'm not a racist at all. A little chink in the armor, a little movement, a little wiggle room, and on and on and on. You got to start small because this is a big nation with a, you know, it's way too big. And, you know, honestly, I mean, I wish I lived in, you know, Sweden or Switzerland sometimes, because it's a lot easier to get a coalition in a place that size, you know, of like-minded people. It's hard to do here. And so you need a moderate.
Yeah.
Who in the top office, I think, to to, you know, help govern for everybody and make these small movements that, you know, are the beginnings of the snowball, if I can use yet another hackneyed metaphor.
Well, that's what the president was talking about in his press conference, in which, you know, it made progressives cry. You know, that press conference. Oh God! Oh my God! We can't tolerate this. The president's actually criticizing us. Oh no!
Yeah, I know.
It's just pathetic. You know, again, I go back.
Stop whining.
Right.
Stop whining.
Stop whining. For God's sake! And the president made the point about, you know, Social Security, made the point about Medicare, that those were bills that were passed and they were incomplete.
Yes.
I mean, they weren't. I mean, Social Security was not. I mean, it was basically, it excluded all sorts of, it excluded clergy. It excluded farmers.
Yeah.
It excluded government employees.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
It was actually quite racist.
It's a flagrantly ahistorical perspective to hold. Uh-huh. You know, it doesn't take into account what this nation is and just how people are, you know? I mean, you know, people, change happens. We would say, Keith Olbermann would say foot dragging. You know what? Carl Sagan would say otherwise. You remember that? Remember Carl Sagan on Cosmos, his awesome PBS show about the nature of the universe?
Of course.
He had this incredible calendar that he showed, and he said, now, and it was Big Bang Theory, and it was starting on the Big Bang, was like January 1st, mm-hmm. right? And then up until the present time was January 31st, right? And he says, now here on January 31st, so these are all the days of the life of the universe. On January 31st, within January 31st, was a tiny little square that would take up like a half an hour. And he said, that's the time since the dinosaurs. You know, you know. In other words, what Keith Olbermann might call foot dragging, Carl Sagan would call the natural progress of things. And in fact, right. We'd probably say things are moving really fast. You know, and we forget that.
Yeah.
And especially, I think we forget that nowadays with technology moving so super fast. You know, but when we run out of oil, everybody's going to calm down a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, it's no consolation for LGBT people who want to, you know, serve openly in the military to have to wait.
But I have friends and family in this situation.
Yeah.
It is our job. It is your job, my job, any voters or citizens or bloggers' job to say repeal, repeal, repeal DADT. But it's the president's job to get it repealed, and you don't get it repealed by acting like a dictator.
Yeah.
Not in any lasting way. Not in a lasting way.
No, and that's exactly it. I mean, because great, okay, you can serve openly in the military. Start the clock. In 2 years, go, and you won't be able to anymore.
Right. You know, we're going to have gay marriage. We're going to have national gay marriage in this
country. Of course.
And it's going to happen. And as did you see Carter said, we're going to have a gay president before too long. And I think he's right.
I think we already have.
You know, that's the direction we're moving in. I agree with you in that it doesn't help when members of the team beat up the president for acting in a rational manner.
Yeah.
And for doing the job, his stated job, his constitutionally stated job description.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, you really have to question why aren't these people? I mean, why the disconnect with political reality? Why? And I'm wondering, and I'm speaking again now about progressives.
Mm-hmm.
Is there
we're beating up on?
Is there some other motivation here for, you know, otherwise sane people to be losing their spadoinkle over all of this? I wrote my previous Huffington Post piece. I wrote a pretty harsh criticism of the president with regards to the way he handled the public view of the deal and the federal pay freeze before that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But the actual and I disagree with the federal pay freeze. I think that was a terrible policy choice.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm not going to try to run Dennis Kucinich in a primary challenge now.
Yeah.
You know?
No.
Which doesn't make any sense.
I mean, but is that what you think it is? I mean, What do you think is the hidden agenda that they may not, it might even be hidden from themselves?
Oh, the, you know what? I mean, here's what I think the hidden agenda is. Traffic. And I don't mind saying. I mean, I think there are a lot of people who, and I'm not going to name names here, but I think there are a lot of bloggers, popular bloggers.
You mean the Steven Soderbergh movie Traffic? Is that
yes,
what you're talking
exactly.
about? The Academy Award-winning movie
exactly.
Traffic?
Exactly, yes.
Starring all Benicio del Toro?
Benicio del Toro, all
what
those
does that
interlocking
have to do
stories.
With anything?
I don't know, but it was very blown out. It was
oh,
very
you mean
bright.
Blog
and,
traffic.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
mean internet traffic. You
exactly.
mean hits.
Traffic. Unique traffic.
Views,
hits. Exactly.
Views,
unique,
ratings.
Unique visitors. All the back end things.
What we call in the TV world ratings.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. I believe that's what's guiding this because what happens is you start. There are a lot of people who want to hear that. They want to see the conflict. They
sure,
and
conflict
there there
is,
was
conflict is everything. It's drama. That's
yeah,
why we tune in for
and,
conflict.
Exactly. And there's still a lot of wounded people from the primaries who, mm-hmm. who want to see the president fail. And I'm not talking about Rush Limbaugh and Republicans and conservatives. I'm talking about progressives who never supported the president in the first place during the campaign mm-hmm. and never supported right. him after he was the nominee.
They supported and John Edwards.
They supported John Edwards. And then they may have supported Hillary Clinton. Some people supported Dennis Kucinich.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, mm-hmm. I mean, Barack Obama wasn't high on the list of progressive favorites.
No.
Even though he should have been. I mean, he absolutely should have been.
Well,
but I mean,
yeah.
and that's the mistake.
I mean, I think
but,
there's
I mean,
arguments pro and con about that, but it doesn't matter.
But
I
we've
mean,
self-anointed ourselves, or the progressives have self-anointed themselves as being, you know, the president's
base.
I don't
think you need to say self-anointed themselves. I think that's a. I think you're being redundant.
Yes,
I think
thank you.
Anointed themselves.
And I good. You know, you've completely filled in for Dingledorf now because you've corrected you've corrected my grammar on the show.
I don't think is he prone to linguistic? You know.
Oh, he makes no bones about his erudition. I mean, he's
oh,
totally yeah. But
he's very smart. He's
oh,
very
man,
smart.
He's never going to do another show again now.
I'm sorry, I had to kill him.
He's done. He's going to quit now. No, I mean, we've anointed ourselves as being the, you know, the president's base, and we're not his base. We're not.
Well, speak for yourself. I'm his base.
Well, I don't think we are. I don't think we are. I think it's regular people. I think it's regular Americans who, many of whom never participated in the political process up until 2008,
right.
who were inspired by this guy and who worked their asses off every day to get him elected. And people who are current, many of whom are currently unemployed, many of whom who are in the 10% tax bracket, who mm-hmm. don't want to see their taxes go up by 50%. With the expiration of the Bush tax rates, which is exactly mm-hmm. what would happen. Everyone in the lowest tax bracket who pay 10%, their taxes would go up to 15%. That's a 50%. See, I know math here on this.
Yeah.
That's a 50% increase in their taxes.
Oof.
Those people, they're the president's base. They're, well, they're included in the president's base, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And the president recognizes this.
Right.
The president doesn't think, you think in a million years that the president believes that Duncan Black is part of his base? Or Glenn Greenwald? Or Jane Hampshire? Are you kidding me? No. No.
They should be.
So,
anyway.
They ought to be, but that's their choice.
Yeah.
They were the ones who have decided that, well, you know, suddenly now that we have the most liberal president since FDR, that we've got to, you know, tear this guy down and hold him accountable. We just basically screech every second of every day, regardless of what he does. And
when he said, remember when he said, they treat me like a dog? They talk about me like a dog, like I'm a dog. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's right. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, I think the other hidden motive is that he's black. I mean, I really do. I think he's black. I mean, I think it's because he's black, well, and I think people don't even know that. But you know, our as Chuck D said, fear of a black planet is so embedded in our consciousness that we don't even think about it. Liberal people, I mean. Mm-hmm. But you know, we say that's a sketchy neighborhood, and what we mean is that's a neighborhood with a lot of black people.
Yeah,
and you know what I'm saying.
You believe actually there's a racial motivation for some progressives not liking this president.
Again, it's not that they aren't racist. any more than anyone is racist. I mean, everyone is racist. Let's just admit that right off the bat. Everyone is racist, as Spike Lee said, in that we view things through the eyes of race. Yeah. You know, we view people, are you a black? I mean, you know, listen to how people just talk casually. They'll talk about a movie and they'll say, you know, oh, who was your favorite character? Oh, that guy. Oh, who? You mean the black guy? You know.
Yeah, right.
We never say the white guy. White people never say the white guy. But conversely, black people will say, oh, you mean the white guy? You know, if they're watching a Spike Lee movie or something like that, you know, or a Tyler Perry movie.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's just we view things through the prism of race. We're doing it less and less as there is more so-called mixed race people on this planet. We're doing it less and less. But I absolutely think when the president said they talk about me like I'm a dog, I mean, I get what he's saying. Mm-hmm. You know, the standard to which he will be held, just like a woman who has to work so much harder than a man to do the same job and get paid less, and not complain about it and not even address it or identify it. It's the same thing with him. Absolutely, I think.
I think the racial component in all of this has more to do with the fact that this president can't, like many progressives want him to, this president cannot start yelling.
He can't get angry.
He is
not allowed to get angry.
That's
because
right.
Then he becomes Chuck D or Spike Lee or whom. That gets totally written off by the majority of Americans.
That's
who
right.
Are, by the way, still white.
And
the majority of Americans.
That's right. And Republicans want this president to be, they want, and they're trying desperately to paint him as, you know, Al Sharpton or, you know,
right.
they want him to be Reverend Wright. And they're trying desperately to make him out to be that character. That's, I mean, Rush Limbaugh's entire show, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, he's there trying to make, you know, Barack Obama look like, Jeremiah Wright. And it drives him batshit that he doesn't act that way. And that is good. That is a positive thing. Okay.
Right.
Anything that's going to flummox Rush Limbaugh is a positive thing. And so, but at the same time, the president can't, he just can't do that. And no one recognizes that more than the president himself. And it also helps a little bit that the president is a very even-keeled guy.
I'm never too hot or too cold. That's my best trait.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And that works because he needs to be.
I think that there is an alienation effect, what Brecht called an alienation effect. I'm talking, of course, of Bertolt Brecht or Brecht, the German playwright. An alienation effect between progressives, between white progressives and the president. I think there is an alienation effect that it is hard for them to see exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They think, look, I'm fucking pissed off and fired up. Why isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, it's because he's black. He can't get like that or he won't get reelected, brother.
And,
you know?
And that the president during the...
And I also think... Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I mean, during the 2008 campaign, the president also recognized, as we were just talking about, that progressives are not going to necessarily get him elected. It's going to be grassroots. It's going to be regular people giving $5 here or $10 there or getting out and canvassing their neighborhood. It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be me bitching on the Huffington Post about the Iraq war or about tax cuts. It's going to be regular people rallying around and being inspired by a different direction. And I think at the very least, and what we lose sight of the most in all of this, and this is the big picture here, is that regardless of whether the president does every last little thing on your wish list, just because you've been blogging about it or tweeting about or writing Facebook status updates about, you know, your pet issue, doesn't mean that the president has to act on that one thing. And just because he doesn't come to your house and wash your dog for you, doesn't mean that he's betraying you. Okay. And so, I mean, and no one, and I hate to keep repeating this, but it's worth emphasizing that no one recognizes this more than the president. He knows where the votes are. He knows where the support is. I mean, just yesterday on Hardball, Chuck Todd and Chris Matthews, thank God, were recognizing the fact that this president's approval rating has hovered steadily at, you know, 45-47% for like a year now. And it's even more than that. You can go back to the midst, you know, the deepest, darkest belly of the healthcare debate, and the president was still in that sweet spot. He was still in that range of support. Why is that? They're flummoxed. Yeah. You know, Chuck, I have no idea why this could be. Well, it's obvious because, I mean, they're looking at the base being the progressive movement and seeing all these pissed off people, Keith Olbermann and Marcos Melitzis and Jane Hampshire and Glenn Greenwald. They see all these guys getting pissy with the president. Well, if they're pissy, how is the president still at 45%? What? Yeah. Fuck wads. It's obvious. It's because the people who are supporting the president at 45% are these real people. And I hate to, we're all real people. New York is a real place in America. Los Angeles is a real place in America. Exactly. But you know what I mean by that. Regular people who pay their taxes and who don't read the blogs all the time, who don't care who Julian Assange is, who only care about what's going to be best for their family and who want a break, you know, who want a break from Reaganomics. And, you know, I mean, everyone recognizes what that is. And so that's why the president remains popular.
Yeah. And I think people, I think voters, when they see him, they continue to see somebody who's responsible, who's intelligent, who's got their interests at heart. You know, I mean, he continues to come off as a very impressive individual, a very a leader. And that's the bottom line. Leadership, real leadership, is not banging your shoe on the table like Khrushchev did,
right?
You know, or saying I'm the decider. That's not real leadership.
And I appreciate you've done your Bush impression there in a public place. Yeah. I think that's outstanding. Taking one for the show.
I'm the decider. Real leadership. I'm the decider. Real leadership is you know, listening to both sides and trying to get them to come closer together.
Yeah.
That's it. And he just did it. You know, I mean, geez, 81 votes in favor of this bill. That's pretty bipartisan.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. And Don't Ask, Don't Tell is going to pass. I think it just passed the House. It looks like they've got 61 votes in the Senate. So it's going to happen. And you know what? It never would have been passed as law through Congress if President Obama had signed some sort of executive order a year ago.
Yeah.
These are things.
And just on the Huffington Post right now, the front page of the Political says, "Fueling the fire, tax cuts fracture potential GOP presidential hopefuls."
Yeah.
So there you go. It not only does it work for average Americans, it helps to put more money in their pockets, but it also helps to get the GOP at each other's throats more.
Right. So
it's win-win, progressives. It's win-win, Marcos.
It totally is. And even if we lose a couple of things, it's the big picture. You know, we didn't get the public option, but you know what? We got, you know, billions, hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies for middle-class families to pay for health insurance. That's huge. You know what? If your family is making $52,000 a year, your premiums you're going to get a $10,000 tax credit. To help you pay for your $10,000 that you would have otherwise had to pay out of pocket. That is enormous.
It's real.
It's real. It's real money. You know what $10,000 a year can buy you? I mean, that's most of your tuition payments for a state-run university.
Right. Why'd you come up with that example?
I don't know. I think because I'm paying for state-run university right now. You know, I mean, it's fine. For Glenn Greenwald to sit in Rio de Janeiro and kind of, you know, hang out and go, okay, the president sucks on civil liberties for detainees. Well, yeah, you know what? He does. But you know what? There are things that we ought to be applauding as we boo, okay?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about when I talk about smart accountability. If we're booing all the time, the booing just just rolls around, snowballs, and becomes white noise, and it's nothing but loud, loud noises, loud screeching, and nothing else. And we become like the Tea Party.
Yeah.
You know, we're smarter than the Tea Party. We're more sophisticated than the Tea Party, I like to think. But the process becomes the same. The technique becomes the same. And then it's, you know, it's nothing. It's not, we don't get anything, then we don't get anything done. And that's what we've done. That's, you know what? That's what have progressives really accomplished since the president was elected? I can't think of anything. What policy have we pushed through?
Well, what progressives? I mean, you mean bloggers? I mean, well,
I think the broader progressive movement. I mean, so like, and I'm bringing up an example, like primarying Joe Lieberman, and you know, and at least forcing him out of the Democratic Party. I mean, little things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I think that what, and I guess conversely, I'm looking at the Tea Party. What did the Tea Party able? They really flummoxed healthcare for a month.
Mm-hmm.
They almost got Park 51, you know, summarily booed out of Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are things that can be done as a movement that we're not doing. We're just getting perpetually out hustled by wing nuts and freak dogs.
I agree. No, I mean, I think a good Democrat is somebody who's articulate, intelligent, willing to disagree, but that the bottom line is rational.
Right.
And when Democrats stop being rational, in my little town, we have this progressive group that's a political action group. And I'm not kidding you, probably 100 emails back and forth between about 6 people fighting over what the name of the group should be. What was clear to me out of it is the name that I wanted the group to be would have never been the name. I wanted the group to be called Pitchforks and Torches, you know. But that's my sensibility. I'm, you know, a goofball. I have a sense of irony. Mm-hmm. I would have never pushed that, honestly, to the group. But some people in the group were pushing their own name without reason, disregarding other people's arguments about the name, you know, about rational arguments, just totally disregarding them, not even responding to them, because in email you can do that. You can ignore 75% of the email. And I realized this is where Democrats fail. It's because we're a big tent, we let a lot of different thinkers in, but where we fail is when we think my way or the highway. You know, my name is the best name. But you know, Pitchforks and Torches wouldn't work for everybody. So I wouldn't spend one email pushing that name, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would say to my friends on the, you know, the more sort of, you know, the guys, the people who were arguing their name past all reason, was stop arguing for it just because you think it's right. Start looking at what's reasonable for everybody. You know, for the greatest good for the greatest number of Vulcans or whatever, right? So you know, but that's, I think that's nutshell, that's the failing of these extreme, you know, of these firebaggers, as you say, is they forget about reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we say in Buddhism, the Buddha is reason. You know, to be enlightened, to be awake, is to recognize reason.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, when, and again, that circles all the way back to what I wrote in the Huffington Post. There's a complete lack of reason when we're looking at the tax cut deal. He's not saying the tax cuts create jobs. He's saying the deal creates jobs, and it does, and it will, because it's math. It's basic math. Unemployment benefits stimulate the economy. It's a good investment in the economy. Meanwhile, Keith Olbermann is not reasonable when he says that the president dragged his feet on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And Keith Olbermann is not reasonable when he says that the president preemptively abandoned the public option and single payer. Or he's completely unreasonable when he says the president wasn't able to close Gitmo. Well, the president did. He signed an executive order closing Gitmo within a year. What was the problem? The Senate didn't vote to finance the closing of it.
Right.
And even the most progressive senators in the Senate, I mean, the vote was something like 96-2.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the most progressive Democrats in the Senate voted against funding to close Guantanamo. Don't tell me that the president failed to close Guantanamo. That's unreasonable. That's unrealistic. It's bullshit.
Yeah.
And then bullshit. all that does is it fires up all of your commenters, and then it spreads in concentric mm-hmm. circles outwards, and it gets into the bloodstream
yeah.
of progressive America, and then suddenly it's President Obama is abandoning us, and we have right. to run a primary candidate against. Oh,
what
I'm
happened?
Not gonna. I'm
what
gonna.
Happened?
Yeah,
what
I'm,
happened
I'm
to
not,
him?
What happened? Yeah, this is not. I've been betrayed. I'm and I'm not gonna vote now. I'm not gonna vote for this president ever. I'm gonna hurl the board game across the room and storm off. You've got kids. You know that how that happens when you know. Yeah. When the one player who's losing gets really frustrated and takes the board game the game of Trivial Pursuit or Monopoly and hurls it across the room and stomps off in a snit. Goodbye, cruel
yeah.
world. You know,
yeah,
you see that in discussion
yeah.
forums online all the time. As soon as someone fucks up in a forum or in a Coase diary, suddenly you get that last diary that says, "Well, I'm done with all of this." I mean, even Olbermann did that one time. I got criticized, so I'm not going to come back here anymore. Boo hoo. You know, and that's what's going on. It's a bunch of whiny foot stomping. I'm sick and tired of it. I don't want to be part of a movement where we can't take criticism from the president. Are you kidding me? Grow up. Grow up.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's
yeah.
really pathetic. And
it's wasting time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it really is wasting time.
It's wasting time.
It doesn't. I mean, he's the guy. So, you know, look, just like all the people who for 8 years, you know, all the environmental groups, LGBT groups who spent the real people. Now, I'm not talking about the mouth, you know, the bloggers or the talking heads on TV. I'm talking about the people that run these 501c3 not-for-profit organizations that are liberal, you know, that are progressive. Mm-hmm. For 8 years, they had to deal with Bush, and they did. You know, for 8 years, they'd assemble petition signatures and deliver them to the White House. For 8 years, they paid lobbyists to try to lobby for legislation in their favor. They just worked with the system mm-hmm. because that's who was in charge.
That's right.
And we happen to have somebody in charge right now who, as you said, is the most liberal president since FDR based mm-hmm. on his voting record.
That's
not an opinion.
Yeah.
That's a fact. And yet we have these people who are supposedly members of his party, who are supposedly supporters of him, not even trying to work with him in a meta sense, you know, because of course none of them are really working with him anyway. But they're not muscling the support for his cause. In fact, they're muscling support against his cause.
That's right. And so therefore, they're not the base. They're not the base.
Right.
They're not
yeah,
the base because they don't
I
want
agree.
Anything to do with helping this.
They talk about him like he's a dog.
That's right. They talk about him like he's a dog. It was that whole whiny. The president criticized us. I'm taking my baseball cards and I'm going home.
Yes.
So unfair.
Are we done? Does that music mean we're done?
Good. No. You know what that means is time to talk about Bubble Genius again.
Oh.
Pure products, pure genius, bubble genius. I mean, these guys are going to rule the world. I don't mind saying. Really. I mean, if you go to Bubble Genius, I mean, just go and look at bubblegenius.com. I mean, it's smart, funny stuff, and then that's also really damn great. I mean, I heard from someone who actually bought the dog soap for themselves because it smells so wonderful. I mean, they sell.
I'm looking at it. Yeah,
it's like a
Little Soap of Bethlehem Holiday Light Soap Set.
Yes,
that's pretty hilarious.
And the glow in the dark, baby Jesus soap on a rope. You know, that's a soap product.
Oh my God.
That's not just for Christmas; it's for the whole year. That's
yeah.
the gift. That's the baby
they
Jesus
gotta get,
soap.
They got to get Ricky Bobby to endorse that. That's what they got to do.
Exactly.
Get the Ricky Bobby endorsement.
And you know what? You can buy it. You can buy it, and you don't have to, you know, you don't have to scrub your bathing suit area with the baby Jesus. You can actually use it as a decorative ornament in your bathroom, which is really what these decorative. I mean, really, they're decorative. I mean, you can buy them as, you know, you want
yeah.
the Joe Lieberman decorative soap on your sink because then you know your friends will think, well, this is someone who knows a little bit about politics.
I do think you want to scrub your bathing suit area with the baby Jesus, because I think that's what the baby Jesus would want.
That's right. What would the baby Jesus do? Well, what would Jesus do? Well, you know what Jesus would do? He would scrub his bathing suit area with, you know, an effigy of himself in soap.
Well, you know, look, you know, is what, the, you know, it, can the hand say what? Into the foot, I am not of the body, right? I'm quoting St. Paul here, right?
That's
so
right.
It's all good. It's all good. Even the bathing suit area. Mm. And it all needs to be cleaned. So
sacrilegious. Mm. Baby Jesus soap on a rope. So, suffice to say, you know, I really believe that as progressives, we need to be supporting progressive businesses. Bubble Genius, Pomegranate Journeys, even my friends over at Full Strength, who they have this great energy and fitness shake that I've been drinking copious amounts of, and it's really actually the most delicious, like, nutrition sort of meal replacement shake I've ever had, ever. And it's
I gotta get that.
Full Strength. Yeah, look it up on Google. Full Strength. It's great stuff.
Okay.
And
all right.
Another progressive business you ought to support. And so, you know, if I see anyone over the next couple of weeks shopping at Target or Walmart or anything else, as I've been saying all along, I'm gonna smack you silly.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
We already said this.
Subscribe,
didn't we?
To the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section.
I wasn't paying attention.
On iTunes.
Yeah,
maybe.
Played that one before. I'm all turned upside down without the Dingledorf. But you've been doing an outstanding job so far, my friend.
Thanks.
Outstanding.
Let's see how many of the commenters attack me.
Well, we're you know, I just think I'm staring at a replacement here. I think maybe the Dingledorf will have to hit the road.
He's really going to be mad now.
He's really going to be mad.
How about a three-way?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, why not? And I, you know, can you do a three-way on Skype? I'm not sure if that's even possible. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to.
I think you can. Or there's other conferencing services.
Well, that's why we haven't had any guests, because I discovered that I don't think it's possible to do more than two people on the Skype at once. Although hearing that there are other sort of voice over IP services that I should be investigating are evidently better than Skype.
Are they more progressive businesses?
I hope they are. I don't even know if Skype is owned by, isn't Skype owned by Google? Skype is owned by someone else. I want to say it's Google. I could be wrong. And I think Google is pretty progressive.
Yeah. I mean, as progressive as any. I mean, look, nobody's 100% progressive. It's just silly, you know? And if you think you are, you probably aren't, you know?
Right.
So.
And before,
progressive. What's wrong with saying liberal anyway? I'm a liberal.
Yeah,
you know?
But I mean, now it's actually, and I was self-referencing myself as liberal for the longest time, and now there's actually become two definitive camps, I think, in the Democratic side of things on the left, and that is progressives are sort of that, I guess, the far left.
I think so.
And liberal is center left.
Weird.
I think that's the dividing line. I think that's what we have now. I think sort of the Glenn Greenwald, Jane Hampshire grouping are progressives. And then liberals are just to the right of the progressives in some way.
That seems wrong in terms of the etymology of those words.
Yeah, and it does, because I consider myself pretty damn liberal. I mean, I consider myself just as liberal as anyone.
Right.
I just tend to be pragmatic about it
right.
in terms of how to actually, you know, legislate.
Well, again, I mean, if I were the president, we wouldn't even have a defense department. You know,
right,
honestly.
Right.
I mean, I would just close the defense department if I were the president.
Yeah.
You know, I'm never going to be the president. And that's part of the reason, because I'd close the defense department.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
I mean, I wouldn't close it, because, of course, I couldn't.
Yeah.
Even if I were elected president, and even if that were my only mission, to close the defense department, it wouldn't happen. And here's why. Because we don't have a dictator running the country.
That's
right. We live in a representational democracy that has, you know, three branches of government. And it was designed that way, as flawed as it is, to create some semblance of balance. That's why the president can't just do whatever the hell he wants. I mean, even George even George W. Bush didn't get to do whatever the hell he wanted most, you know, much of the time. I mean, I know liberals or progressives want to think that he did, but outside of launching those wars, which were totally ginned up on phony intelligence and also a lot of angry sentiment based on 9/11, he and the tax cuts, which rode in on the back of those wars, he didn't, you know, he didn't get to do a lot of the things he wanted.
No, he didn't.
He didn't privatize Social Security. He wanted to, but he didn't.
In fact, he failed on a lot of things. I mean, once the sort of the fear and the insanity of 9/11 dissipated, the president, I mean, president's second term was a disaster.
A total disaster.
I mean, other than Medicare Part D, he had no real domestic successes whatsoever.
Right. So, and again, that's where I go back to. If you want a president like that, a president who's my way or the highway, admittedly for your side, for the left, then you find one. But they will suck, just like Bush sucked.
That's right.
Because I would submit to you, Bush didn't only suck because of his positions. He sucked because of his process.
Right. You know what? Before we wrap up the show, and I know, and I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day, and I've taken up way too much of your time already. But before we wrap up the show, we got to do a stupid Palin thing of the week. Palin thing of the week. I don't know if you saw this quote, and it wouldn't be a Bob and Elvis show without some Sarah Palin talk.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe we've avoided her.
And she was in Haiti. I mean, of all places,
she's too damn entertaining.
Yeah, but she went to Haiti,
mm-hmm.
and she said in Haiti, and this is just Sarah Palin, typical Sarah Palin, yanking something out of her ass. She says, "I know that there's been some discussion of U.S. aid perhaps being lifted from this area." What? Who? Someone's been discussing eliminating aid to Haiti? Really? When? That's completely made up. And then she says, again, not to get political, but if perhaps some of the politicians would come here and see the conditions, perhaps they would see the need for, say, a military airlift to come bring supplies that are so needed here. A military airlift to come and bring supplies. What the hell is she talking about?
What is she talking about?
I have
no idea. What
do you
think she's talking about?
I have no idea. Maybe she thinks that it's like East Berlin or something that we need to. Parachute supplies into the war zone.
I think, you know what I think. I'm gonna throw out a hunch. My hunch is that she was watching an NCIS marathon, for 24 hours on the plane on her way down there, and she just. You know, she just had her head wrapped around, you know, kind of crazy stuff, you know, that happens in TV shows,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
And you saw the Palin spokeswoman declined to elaborate.
That's right.
Meant.
They're just throwing up their hands anymore. They just say, well, we have no idea what she's talking about either. So good luck with that, folks. Oh my God. Well, thank you. Thank you, Christian Plummer, for joining the show today and filling in for Elvis Dingledean.
My pleasure.
Now, I think, if nothing else, you should be allowed to promote your favorite show on television.
My favorite show on television has been canceled. It's called Terriers, and I'm sorry for you if you didn't watch it.
It was canceled. When was it canceled?
It was canceled by FX about a week and a half ago. And in fact, they did the unprecedented thing of having a conference call with critics, John Landgraf, the head of FX, to explain why the show was canceled and how heartbroken he was to cancel it, which is a pretty cool thing for a network head to do. So they didn't want to cancel it either, but the ratings were just abysmal. But, you know, that's for another podcast. The Nielsen ratings is a complete sham, and it must be done away with because it's killing good TV and keeping bad TV on the air.
Right. How many of our favorite shows recently have been canceled? I mean, I could name several of them at least, like Deadwood. The Riches, which was an FX show that I really, really loved. The Riches with Eddie Izzard.
Yeah. Yeah, and there are lots of different reasons they get canceled, but basically, it's insane that in this day and age, with the internet as it exists, and with the kind of media tracking that goes on now, that we are still, the television industry still holds on to this completely bogus Nielsen system.
Right.
It's absurd.
Yeah, it is.
You know, just completely absurd. It's like the Electoral College.
Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us, you fudge with the best. We'll be back. You know what? We won't be back for another 2 weeks because next week is Christmas Eve. So see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
Take care. Soak yourself up with the baby Jesus.
Bye, everybody.